Bruce Williamson joins us now from Rail Future. It's a campaign group. Bruce, thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Julia.
You've described it as war against the train passenger today. That's a pretty extreme statement. What do you mean?
Well, I feel justified in saying that because, you know, we're getting a service that has actually had, you know, a terrible year. You know, people have really suffered on the trains this year. And yet the government persists in pricing people, not just at inflation, but above inflation. Now, they do a sneaky little trick here. I don't know if you know this. There's two ways of measuring inflation, CPI and RPI. Let's call them the low measure and the high measure. The government says it prefers the low measure for things like, I don't know, wages, benefits, whatever. But of course, when it comes to rail fares, they use the high measure, RPI. And that means that, you know, in real terms, the cost of rail travel is going up. It's taking an ever greater chunk out of people's wallets.
Bruce, aren't you slightly letting the rail companies off the hook? Because the government doesn't set rail fares. They cap these rail fares at that higher RPI. The rail companies themselves can choose anything up to 3.2%, can't they?
Yeah, they can, but realistically, they've got no choice because their business plan depends on being able to charge as much as they can for rail tickets. Because, you know, if you planned your franchise, if you put in a bid at rail fare increases going up by less than inflation, then you would be able to pay less for the franchise and you wouldn't win it. So realistically, they have to follow the government's lead on this. So I think we need to, you know, aim our fire squarely at the government who are in control here.
We can aim our fire at the government on that measure, certainly. But in terms of value for money, which is what the companies are delivering for that money, we've got to look at the rail companies as well, haven't we?
Well, but again, I think, you know, most passengers don't appreciate the extent to which they're micromanaged by the Department for Transport. And indeed, you know, the timetable chaos we had last year now, isn't it? It's 2019. You know, that was largely down to the government's failure to plan. I mean, obviously, the train operating companies get the flak, but we need to, again, aim our fire at Chris Grayling, who's trying to pass the buck. He had a role to play in that.
Well, why don't you remind people, because not everybody listening travels regularly by rail, what happened with the new timetables? I think it was May last year, wasn't it?
That's right, it was May, yeah. They introduced new timetables across the board, and there were two franchises that were, well, three really, that were particularly badly hit, Northern, Thameslink and Southern. And what happened there was that, you know, it was so badly planned, they just didn't have the trains and they didn't have the drivers trained up. So, or have the drivers at all, in fact. So the trains simply didn't run. It was an absolute fiasco. And, you know, the reason was this was it was all coordinated centrally and coordinated centrally very badly. And it all just fell apart. It was terrible.
Today, Chris Grayling, this morning, speaking to the BBC, has blamed the rail unions for the rise in fares. These are his exact words. He said, the fare increases are higher than they should be because the unions demand, with threats of national rail strikes, higher pay rises than everyone else. Typical pay rises within the rail unions are well over 3%. That is what's driving the rising costs. Do you buy that?
Only partly. I mean, it is true that for some sort of historical reason, the rail unions have secured a deal for RPI increases in their income every year. But of course, you know, paying staff is only a small proportion. Well, not that small, but it's only part of the story. There are other expenses that the train operating companies have to deal with. It's not just wages. So Chris Grayling can't put all the blame on the unions. It's a very deliberate policy on the part of the government, because what they want to do is they want to subsidise the railways less and put more of the cost onto the rail passenger, which, you know, seems fair enough, doesn't it? Why shouldn't the rail passenger pay for the railways? But it fails to take into account the sort of external benefits that we get beyond just the rail passenger if we have a decent railway.
How can people continue to afford these season tickets? This is what I'm curious about, because they seem to continue. We have had over a number of years, decades, we've had an increase in rail use. So it doesn't seem to be deterring people from using the railways.
You're right, and it is a bit of a mystery, actually. You know, in the last 20 years, passenger numbers have doubled. They've gone up and up and up, and you know, the government have got away with putting, in the past, not just RPI, but RPI plus one. But there is evidence now that it's starting to level off. It's starting to deter passengers. I think last year and the year before, the growth in rail numbers sort of leveled off. So maybe, you know, I think there is that anecdotal evidence. Clearly, for any passenger, there's a limit, isn't there? You know, you couldn't afford £1 million ticket. It would stop you travelling by train. And actually, the level at which people will stop travelling by train is considerably lower than that. And we may have reached that point now.
What do you think needs to change for the railways to be good, and obviously the money to go in to make them good, for people to feel like they're getting value for money? I mean, there's all sorts of ideas, including the big political idea from Labour, which is to renationalise the railways. Yeah. I haven't been yet convinced that there is evidence that that would make things better. Have you?
Yes and no. I think we rail renationalisation is very popular. If you poll people, about three quarters of the population are very much in favour of it. I think we've witnessed it, actually. You'll be aware possibly that the East Coast Main Line franchise has failed several times and gone back into public hands,
and made money, didn't it? In the brief spell,
it did. It's a very profitable franchise. I mean, some of the commuter franchises lose money. Mm. Some of the intercity ones tend to make money. And the East Coast West Line is a very profitable franchise. But some of the previous operators bit off more than they can chew. So, yeah, when it was in public ownership, it worked very well. Passenger satisfaction was very good. And it gave money back to the Treasury. So there's evidence that it would work. But I think we mustn't fool ourselves that renationalisation is some sort of magic bullet, because, you know, we would still have the same trains run by the same people on the same lines to the same timetable, broadly speaking. And the solution to rail's ills, I mean, you've touched on it, it's investment. The railways pretty much universally have suffered from decades of underinvestment. So the recipe to put things right is long-term sustained investment rather than the feast and famine that we've suffered from.
Well, which everybody pays for, which I pay for even though I don't really use the railways. Is that the point? You think the general taxes should be used to improve the railways?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, you know, it depends on a state subsidy. I don't think anyone's disputing that, really, you know, because it's sort of essential for big cities like London. If you imagine London with no railways whatsoever, it would simply grind to a halt. So the government recognises, although the Conservatives sort of less so than maybe Labour would, that there are external benefits. There's a strong case for subsidising the railway. And that, you know, that will continue for the foreseeable future, although, you know, actually things are getting better in the sense that we have more passengers using the railway, so they make more money. But I don't think we'll ever have a totally profitable rail system.
Really great to talk to you this morning, Bruce. Thank you very much for your time.
You're most welcome.
Bruce Williamson is from Rail Futures. Pick up on anything you heard there or make your own point.